So we're continuing our series on sharing your faith in Jesus with the people that you love. And I've said on this story for the past couple of years. There was a woman who was on a tour bus with other people that she did not know very well because they were, you know, just on a bus together. And they stopped at a rest area and she changed clothes. And then when they got back to go on, they realized that someone was lost. And so they had to search for this person. And this whole bus of people orchestrated a search party and searched for hours. And that led to this headline a few days later. Woman joins, if you could put that up, woman unwittingly joins search party looking for herself. Not all who wonder are lost, I guess. Because they didn't know. She had changed clothes. And one of the things that I've seen, I don't know, a dozen times, is you don't know how much you need to share your faith. I've seen people realize, I need to make a decision for Jesus just by sharing the Christian faith with other people. So last week we talked about how the hard things that happen in life may be the way God shapes you to use you to bless other people. Your test is your testimony and your mess is your message. And that means you're an expert on this. I've heard people talk about evangelism. They define it like this: two very nervous people talking with each other. I like that definition, but I don't think that has to be the case. You don't have to be afraid of this. The last thing Jesus said when he left his bodily ministry on this earth was go into all the world and preach the gospel and make disciples, teaching them how to obey everything I commanded. Things like, you don't have to live in fear. You don't have to live with a sense of purposelessness or meaninglessness or despondency and despair. You don't have to live a life filled with anxiety. Like, Jesus really can help you with all those things and way more. And you can obey those kind of teachings. They seem impossible maybe to some of us. But Jesus is saying, you can become like me. And that those last words of Jesus, they're known as the great what? Let's say it one more time. The great commission. That's right. Not the great mission. The great commission, as in, you're not doing this alone. That's the best news I know. Jesus is with us. God is with us. And God is like Jesus said. Remember that story Jesus said of God is like a farmer who's always throwing out seed. And sometimes the seed lands on concrete. Sometimes it lands on soil that's not very good. Lots of weeds choke it out. And sometimes it's very fertile soil. But the farmer is always throwing the seed out for anyone who is open and available. Here's one of the ways God does that, through creation. That's how the Bible talks about it, that every sunset you see, every river you see, every mountain, everything in the world, all the stars, the galaxy, are all bearing witness to the goodness of God. Also our conscious. God is constantly speaking to us if we can take the AirPods out to listen. So you're not doing this alone. God is always throwing the seed. You know the word missionary never appears in the Bible? That's not a Bible word. That's a word we invented. As in, like, some people are supposed to do this and maybe your job is to, like, fundraise for them or something. The word sent ones is in the Bible a lot. And it applies to every person who's given their life to Jesus. As in, the Father has sent me and I am sending you, which means every follower of Jesus is either a missionary or an imposter. Now, we live in a world that doesn't welcome this, right? That's kind of what makes it awkward. So the pull of culture is keep your faith to yourself. Keep your faith private. But the pull of Jesus is to make your faith public. So I want to tell you about two different research things that happened last year. One was by Lifeway Christian Research Company. They interviewed a lot of church people, and they found out that only a third of people last year in America shared their faith that are followers of Jesus. About 10% were eager to share their faith, and 58% were neutral or negative about the idea of sharing their faith. But there's another research project that actually got me excited. It's by Barna, another Christian research group, and they interviewed tens of thousands of atheists, agnostics, and people who are nuns or checked on the religious census box, none of the above. And they asked them, what are you looking for most in life? And these are their answers. 30% said peace. 24% said hope. 23% said truth. 24% said growth. And 23% said healing. Meaning, the very things that are on the menu when you come to faith in Jesus are the things that tens of thousands of people far from God are looking for. Look, sharing your faith would be enough to do just because Jesus said to do it. But our world is hurting. Our world is broken and suffering. And instead of getting a beautiful picture of what God has done in Jesus, who God is, what God is like, instead, most people on the outside are getting a corrupted, counterfeit, careless, and uncompelling vision of God and what's available to them. Like, instead of a friend or family member or coworker or neighbor sitting down with someone who cares about them and has their best interests at heart, who, you know, will have a courageous conversation and get into the questions and stuff that they have, instead what they get is a street preacher who they constantly, you know, they make it sound like God is most interested in who he can send to hell. Instead of a relational presence that can, like, walk through the hard questions, what they get is a bunch of political posts on Facebook. And they think, okay, so if I was to be interested in Jesus, I'd have to sign up for all that. And perhaps the worst of it is, we have taken the greatest story the world has ever heard. And if you doubt that, you don't know the story. Because the story is this. God cared enough about us to become one of us. And we killed him. And he came back from the dead. And did nothing but give us, in return for that, did nothing but offer us redemptive, forgiving love. And we took that story, the story that's beneath all great stories, and we made it boring, toothless, and stale. But despite all that, listen, the reality of hell, the hope of heaven, and the love of God compels us. This mission, this co-mission, is too great for it to remain hidden in our life. So we have to find a way forward. So there's one of the earliest followers of Jesus, a guy named Peter, writes a letter in the first century to another group of followers of Jesus that he's helped lead to faith. And he says to them, I want you to always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have. And that's what I want to do today. I want to give you a way to get prepared for it. So through this series, we've kind of talked about different things you can do. Like, maybe you're a great inviter. So we showed you can be like, has anyone invited you to PV yet? That's a great sentence. That's a non-threatening sentence. Has anyone invited you to PV yet? Or you can do this. Maybe you're a prayer warrior. Or maybe you're not and you want to grow in that. Here's what you can do with somebody that you have a relationship with or care about. Say this. We talked about this a few weeks ago. If I was going to pray for you for the next 7 days, what would you like me to pray for? Now, that may sound like it's way too intimate. I promise you, the majority, the great majority of people will be blessed and receptive to that. Don't take my word for it. Blake Hendricks, who did communion today, called me a couple of weeks ago after we first talked about this and said, I got to tell you this story. He called Delta to get some ticketing stuff, and the person who the agent he was talking to was having a rough day. Her name was Cassie. She's in another state. We could tell something was going on. And so he said, even though it was 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, I could tell she was heavy hearted. Here's what he said. After listening to the sermon that morning about sharing and praying with others, Jonathan said, sharing the word is not sales. And that really resonated with me. And I felt the Spirit moving in me. And I said, Cassie, I am not a religious fanatic, but if you don't mind, I'd like to pray for you. And he said, I was surprised by how quickly she said, yes, I would love that, and I think I'm going to cry. And he said, her voice cracked. I started to cry too, and I knew I needed to gather myself. He said, my prayer was brief, and if you know me, that's a miracle in itself. But he said, dear Lord, look down on Cassie and give her the peace that only you can give. She has a lot on her plate right now. Give her wisdom and comfort in your son's name. Amen. And she you know, kept on doing her job, booked his plane ticket. He said she was professional, but her demeanor changed immediately. And you could hear her voice. She was relieved, and her conversation was lighter, and she even laughed a little. And as she said goodbye, she thanked me for my prayer, and I said, there have been a lot of times in my life when I couldn't make it without God. It wasn't me, Cassie. He is bigger than both of us, and sometimes we just have to ask. He said, I have prayed for my friends and family members before, but never a complete stranger. It was a really cool moment, way more than I envisioned. And he also said, it was also the quickest I have ever applied a sermon. Yeah. I know a lot of people who don't believe in God, like atheists and stuff like that. I'm telling you, 99 out of 100, if you offered that, they would not receive that with, like, who do you think you are? I mean, especially if you're not trying to win an argument. Don't do it then. But they won't be offended. They'll see you care for them in a world that's not got a lot of caring in it. You're not like trying to sign them up for forced tithing or something. You're expressing a sincere care for them in a world that doesn't offer that much. But this is really helpful if you have a relationship with someone. So when Leslie and I lived in Fort Worth, the neighbors across the street were Joey and Jackie. And it is hard to communicate how hostile to religion Joey was, my neighbor. He had grown up Mormon in Utah, and because of some stuff that happened, abuses and trauma, he had wanted nothing to do with anything religious. And then a preacher moves in next door to him. And at first it was kind of hard, but in God's great wisdom, he made me incredibly incompetent at anything with my hands. And Joey was a handyman. So I was over at his house always getting help and all that kind of stuff. And I'm telling you, Leslie and I, we were on a bowling league with Joey and Jackie. We got into their lives, and I wound up doing marital counseling, grief counseling. I did funerals for family members, more than one. And just last week, Joey would never come to church. But a couple of years ago, his wife, Jackie, became a Christian. It was this huge moment. Listen, now we're so pumped, even though we don't even live in Texas or around them anymore. We stayed in touch with them. She becomes a Christian. And last week, Joey calls because he's seeing something go on in his wife. And he's just asking questions. And I've earned that phone call by being in his life and just caring for him. Not trying to sell him anything. I just think Jesus really is really good. And it'll change Joey's life for the better. And at one point, as Joey is describing what's going on, he says, man, I just feel so lost. And I was like, Joey, this guy that I love, he's a great guy. I said, Joey, there was a time in my life. And then I told him what I'm about to teach you how to do. Leslie and I have been in their life for the last 2 decades. And I'm telling you, he is not far from the kingdom of God. So for the last 6 years, I've been going to the same place to get my hair cut. I think that's a great way to build relationship and stuff. And the woman who's been cutting my hair, this young adult, she's this wonderful person. Her and her boyfriend, they lived together. They had a couple of kids. And I let them know I was a preacher and been going there for the last 6 years, and I knew she wanted to get married to her boyfriend, and I said, listen, I'm a preacher. I'll do your premarital counseling if you're interested in that, and that's how I got involved in their life, and so you're going to have to figure out your own if you don't do premarital counseling, but there are ways to get involved in people's lives with just, care and concern, and at one point, I was like, hey, I really think church would be helpful to you, like sincerely. You don't have to come and give money or anything. You can, but it would be helpful for you. And so they started talking about that, and then they started going to a church in Benton. And I was like, dagnabbit. No, I was happy. I was so happy. And then they started getting more and more involved, and I could see every time I would go back to get a haircut, Jesus was starting to do more and more stuff in their life. And this last month, I'm canoeing the buffalo with Leslie and my best friend and his wife. My best friend's a pastor in Branson, Missouri, but he grew up in Benton too. And on the Buffalo River is a guy that Bub grew up with, floating the river, who is a pastor at that church that they started going to. And I was like, stop the canoe. I was like, hold on, I got a friend that I want to tell you about. And I tell him, and he's like, oh my goodness, I know who you're talking about. You're never going to believe this. She and her the fiance, by the way, that they're engaged now, super cool. She and her fiance just got baptized this last week. Yeah, it was this really cool moment. I was like, I got to get a haircut. So I did. And Devin could not do anything but gush about it. And I'm telling you that to say this. Listen, for the last 6 years, I haven't been like, listen, if you don't, you know, break up with your boyfriend, I'm going to disfellowship you as my barber or something like that. No, I've just been watching for what God is doing in her life, and God was doing stuff in her life. I'm just paying attention. That's what I mean with co-mission. It's not that you are doing this by yourself. You're doing this with Jesus and with the help of the Holy Spirit and brothers and sisters around the world. Here's the way the early Christian, the Apostle Paul, said it. Because there was a time in this church in a city called Corinth where people were saying, you know, it's all up to this one guy. He's a better leader. It's all up to this guy. He's a better leader. And Paul is like, look, who is Apollos? That's one of the leaders they said were better than the other. And who am I? Paul. Only servants to whom you came to believe as the Lord has assigned to each his task. I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. In other words, it is not all up to you. It's not all up to me. Let's say the journey towards following Jesus is like a scale of 1 to 100. And you meet someone at like a 37. And your testimony, your prayer, your love or care moves them to a 38 or 39. And at the moment of them coming to faith, you're not there and you don't see it. But God does. Let me tell you what's going to happen. When you die and you're in heaven, God's going to wake up Ray Bolts and be like, sing that song. And he's going to go, thank you for giving to the Lord. Y'all know that song? Am I the only person in this church that knows that song? You should listen to it. It's really powerful. And the reason it's powerful is because it expresses this big truth. If you're faithful in this life to God's great commission, you will never see in this life all the fruit of that. That's right. And as great as those stories are today, and I'm telling you, I am a junkie about this kind of stuff because I love redemption stories. I love transformation stories. I've got a front row seat to hundreds of them in my life, and I want to teach you how to do it. So I told you last week about my friend Jacob who walked away from the Christian faith, and before he did, he was trying to hold on to it, and he asked his friends, us, what has Jesus saved you from? And I didn't have an answer. I was in my mid-20s. And we didn't have an answer. And I think the reason why is because for those of us who grew up inside the Christian faith, this giant thing that is the Christian faith, I think we largely take it for granted. It's all some of us have ever known. And so we take for granted things like my parents stayed together in a really hard season of their marriage. Or when I suffered illness or sickness like what Josh testified to today. When I suffered mental health problems, I had community and support. Or, this is a big one I think we take for granted in a world that basically disciples us and think that our lives are meaningless, so do what you want. We take for granted the meaning and the purpose that we have. Or, the stuff that we've done that's bad, because we're humans. We've done stuff. We've done stuff, and sometimes our only solution to it has been just try not to think about it. But the stuff that we've done that's really bad isn't, we don't have crushing guilt or shame about it because of Jesus. We take that kind of stuff for granted. And so we don't talk about what Jesus has actually saved us from. But the people on the outside of Christianity, those are the kind of questions they're actually asking. And the good news is we have so many examples in the Bible of the early Christians. That's what they did. So there's this one time in the Gospel of John where Jesus heals a man born blind. He was blind from birth. He heals him, gives him his eyesight back. It's this amazing story, except the religious leaders don't like it. What kind of people don't like stories like that? And so they're mad at they're mad at Jesus and they're trying to stop him. They're mad at the guy who was blind, and they come in hot to him, and they're like, you know, how do you know that it was Jesus who did it? Or you know, Jesus got a lot of baggage, he's got a lot of problems. I would distance yourself from him. And this guy's like, I can see you. He's like, is anybody? You're losing sight of the plot. And they keep coming in hot about Jesus. And so the blind guy, formerly blind guy, says this one thing. Look, whether Jesus is a sinner or not, I don't know. One thing I do know. I was blind, and now I see. For some of you, the reason you don't share your faith is because of this. This would be a nightmare. You start to talk to somebody and then they're like asking you questions about theological stuff. And you're like, that's why I don't do it. Listen, Jesus is with you and you know plenty because of what I'm going to help you do today. It comes naturally. Tell your story. Do you hear what that guy did? The one thing I know. Look, I can't answer questions like on that or this, but I can tell you this. This is what God has done in my life. I told you last week, God gave us the gospel according to Matthew and Mark and Luke and John. But what your world needs, what your friends and neighbors and coworkers and family members need, is the gospel according to you, because you have been delivered by something. You have, and your mess is your message. Look, people argue about everything, right? It's an election year. That should be like, yeah, you get that. We argue about everything. How does the Trinity work? Why does bad stuff happen to people that we love if God is good? But the one thing they can't argue with is your story. There was one of the most influential people in world history was this man named Paul, one of the early followers of Jesus. Paul was trained in philosophy. He was trained in theology. He spoke half a dozen languages. He traveled the world. And as brilliant as he was, when Paul got backed into a corner, or when he was going to share his Christian faith, you know what he did? He told the story. He didn't argue. He just told what Jesus had done for him. So if you have a Bible, turn to Acts chapter 22, starting in verse 3. And if you don't, it's going to be on the screen right behind me. So Paul is, everywhere he goes, people tend to start a riot. And a riot has kind of broken out here, and they've calmed it down. And Paul has asked if he could speak. And here's what he says. Paul says to a bunch of Jewish people who are rioting, upset at these new followers of Jesus, specifically Paul. Paul says, I am a Jew. I was born in Tarsus of Cilicia. I was brought up in the city. I studied under Gamaliel, and I was thoroughly trained in the law of the ancestors. I was just as zealous for God as any of you are today. I persecuted the followers of Jesus to their death. I helped kill people. I arrested both men and women and threw them into prison. As the high priest and all the council who were there, by the way, can testify, I even obtained letters from their associates to make this a global movement. I was moving away from Jerusalem. I was going to Damascus. I was going to arrest these people as prisoners and bring them to Jerusalem to be punished. About noon, as he's going to Damascus, suddenly a bright light from heaven flashed around him. And I fell to the ground, and I heard a voice say to me, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? I asked. I am Jesus of Nazareth, who you are persecuting, he replied. My companions saw the light, but they did not understand the voice of him who was speaking to me. What shall I do, Lord? I asked. Get up, the Lord said, and go into Damascus, and there you will be told all that you have been assigned to do. My companions led me by the hand into Damascus because of the brilliance of the light had blinded me. A man named Ananias came to see me. He was a devout observer of the law and highly respected by all the Jews there. He stood beside me and said, Brother Saul, receive your sight. And at that very moment, I was able to see him. And then he said, The God of our ancestors has chosen you to know his will and to see the righteous one and hear words from his mouth. You will be his witness to all people of what you have seen and heard. And now what are you waiting for? Get up and be baptized and call upon, wash your sins away and call upon his name. I want you to see what Paul did. This very intellectual person does not go the intellectual route. Here's the reason that there's a God and that Jesus is his son and was raised. No, that's not what he does. Instead, he tells a story. So I'm going to help us today tell our story. You should have got a sheet of paper as you were walking in, and on it there's some blanks. I hope you fill this out. We're going to help you do it. So the first line in telling your story is this. There was a time in my life, and think to your life before Jesus got a hold of you. And we're going to pick two words out of a list I'm going to show you in a second. I want you to just pick a couple of words because you're not writing a memoir. This is a 15-second testimony. You're not. This doesn't have to be war and peace, right? I want you to choose a couple of words out of these categories. Just what was your life like before Jesus? Or hard seasons in your life. Don't, as you pick these down, just write a couple down. Don't be disingenuous or insincere. Describe words that honestly describe your life. So, in other words, you're not auditioning for a Jerry Springer episode, right? Like, tell the truth about your life, but if you've been changed by Jesus, give him the credit that he's due. And then right in the middle of there, it should be on your paper, but if not, write it down. And then Jesus forgave me, and I chose to follow him. The before and after thing. Now, you may want to put more detail in there about what that looked like, but I'm saying don't. Because you're not, we're not in Christendom, which is the kind of era of Christianity I grew up in, where mostly what churches did was try to talk people out of being one kind of Christian to another kind of Christian. That's great, but that's not what this is. You're in a post-Christian mission field, and this is your first move. Your story. What did Jesus save you from? And then describe the life you have now. Again, be sincere. You're not saying your life is perfect, but you're saying what difference is made. So pick a couple of words that describe your life now. Things like loved, free, freedom, complete, found, seen, heard. You can see these words. Take some of these words and use it to tell your story. And then you end this 15-second testimony by saying, do you have a story like that? I love that question. And then listen, maybe they do. Be humble and interested and curious. Okay, so I've been doing this long enough to know that whenever something like this, a resource comes out, there are people in church that are like, nope. that's just like Mad Libs or whatever. Maybe you think it's too formulaic or whatever. I would encourage you to try it. In the words of one great preacher, D.L. Moody, I like my version of evangelism better than your version of not doing it. And what I'm trying to do is equip you to be prepared to give an answer for the hope that you have. So I'm humbly asking you to try this, and more than once, because in my experience, this actually makes connections with people. It works. There's a Mark Twain quote that I really like that says, anyone who has grabbed a bull by the tail knows five or six more things than someone who hasn't. In other words, try it. Because the problem with Christians in America is not that we don't know enough. You know plenty. The problem is that our obedience and application has way, our knowledge has way outpaced our obedience and application. So let me just tell you, I've been using this for the last 6 months. As soon as I discovered this resource, I got it from a pastor friend who is a disciple-making movement guy named Josh in India. And as soon as I discovered this resource, I was like, this is exactly what the early Christians did. So I've been using it for the last 6 months. I got to tell you, a couple of months ago, there was a new friend named Anthony who just showed up to church on a Wednesday night. He started coming to our 242 group because he's interested in Christianity. We're about the same age. And I love Anthony. He's fast become one of my better friends. And Anthony, never been around church at all. Just comes, what he calls, our circle group is what he calls it. I love Anthony. And he has no kind of Christian background, but he's interested. He knows something is missing in his life. And so Anthony, whenever he's at church, we sit together. And he came on a Wednesday night before Easter, and we weren't having circle group, 242 group. And I'm sitting next to him, and I realize he doesn't know what this is. I say, do you know anything about Easter? And he says,
you mean like the bunnies and stuff? And I'm like, no, I mean, let me tell you what it is. So I showed him the people who were there. I was like, look, they're lawyers, they're doctors, they're engineers, they're architects. Because what I'm about to tell you is going to sound strange, but I want you to know these people are not naive and credulous. These are smart people. But we believe that 2,000 years ago, Jesus was crucified. Like, he was good and dead. He was buried, killed, and for 3 days he was dead. And then Easter is Christians around the world and in this room saying, we believe Jesus came back to life and he has never died again. And Anthony said, well, that does cast suspicion on all of this. Because he hears it for the first time in a way that maybe that helps you hear it again for the first time. And Anthony said, why do you believe this? And I said, Anthony, there was a time in my life, and I told him my 15-second testimony. And that's the story of how Anthony and Adam Bledsoe and I have been going through the Gospel of Mark for the last 7 weeks. Okay, so in a remarkably short amount of time, something that has happened, and I hope you've heard it communicated here because it's true. The odds are wherever you live, the people in your neighborhood or workplace are largely unconnected to a local church or Jesus, which means, especially if you grew up in Christianity in America, it is not the same phenomenon. Churches are no longer servicing different kinds of Christians. We're now a church that finds itself needing to be on mission in a mission field, and we weren't trained for that. The practices of decades are not calibrated for a U.S. culture that is essentially fundamentally different. What churches got started to do in America, the culture has changed so dramatically. So let me illustrate that with this. In 1998, a Japanese firm built a bridge in Honduras. It's a great bridge. I want to show you a couple of pictures. It's the Chattaluca Bridge over the Chattaluca River. Perfect, right? Looks like a fine, upstanding bridge. And then, sometime later, a Category 5 hurricane came and stalled out over Honduras and dumped 75 inches of water. And so I'm going to show you the next picture, but before I do, I want you to know it's a little bit disorienting. At first, when you see it, especially if you don't know what it is, you're confused. But here's what happened to the Chattaluca Bridge. If you could go to the next slide. Now, did they mess up when they built the bridge? No, right? What happened? The river moved. And now the bridge that had a very good purpose at its foundation looks obsolete and frankly is. It looks silly just sitting there. The problem isn't that they built the bridge in the wrong place. The problem is the bridge moved. And I like this as a metaphor for churches in America, because what's happened for years in churches, here's what happened in towns all over America, cities all over America. When a town or city was started, the very first building that was built was the church, right? When a family came to a new community, one of the first things they saw it was a church home. During the 20th century, a lot of Americans believed America was a Christian nation. Churches were important and respected, and they helped set the agenda and the atmosphere for the community. So churches didn't have to strategize to reach people. They just opened their doors. And that river moved. Surveys have been plentiful over the last couple of decades. Millions of people who were previously church members, followers of Jesus, walked away. Even in so-called church communities, the average attending worship is somewhere between 18 to 22%. The number of Americans who say they have no religious affiliation is higher than it's ever been in every census. It gets higher. In overwhelming numbers, that young adults perceive the organized church to be unnecessary, unhelpful, and maybe even problematic for their spiritual journey. The U.S. church was well-built, well-positioned to span the river of U.S. culture. And no longer. In fact, there are more missionaries coming from Africa and China and Asian countries than we're sending. Which, by the way, some good news. Christianity is the fastest growing faith in the world. Secularism, which is kind of what's happening in America and Europe, is actually in decline. But it doesn't feel like that. Christianity is blowing up and going across the global south. But you know what all this makes us? Missionaries. Today, there are as many Lutherans in Ethiopia as there are in the entire U.S. There are more Baptists in Nagaland, an eastern state in India, than there are in all the southern states of the U.S. There are more Christians worshiping in China today than there are in all of U.S. or Europe. The bad news, the good news is Jesus is alive and well and things are moving. The bad news is we weren't trained to be missionaries. We were trained to be church people. The good news is Jesus knows this and has made provisions for it. Listen, can I tell you, I love sharing my faith with people because here's what I know that maybe even they don't know, and I don't know if you know it. My friends aren't interested in churchianity. But real biblical Christianity, they're aching for it. They might not even have language to describe it, but they're looking for what Jesus has already called his followers to be. People notice when someone is willing to be self-sacrificial for the good of others. Their heart swells. People appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about spiritual questions without being manipulated. People are intrigued by someone that they see that has both grace and wisdom. People are looking for the kinds of people who show authentic love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and self-control. They cheer redemptive action in a world of lies. They want to see somebody who tells the truth. So do you have a story like that? 20 years ago, I led a spring break campaign to Calgary, Canada. And the Calgary church that we were working with, you know, it's very secularized, even back in the early 2000s. Very secular. I think less than 2% of people went to any house of worship of any kind. Buddhist, Muslim, Baha'i, Christian, any kind. And so they sent a bunch of us college students out to a park. This was the preacher there's idea, with light bulbs. And we were supposed to walk up to people and say, here's a light bulb. Jesus is the light of the world. So what I'm teaching you is better than that, right? And you think, there's no way this is going to work at all. Until I met Tina Parsons, who was about 23 years old. She's sitting on a park bench. I walk up with a light bulb and say that. And because she was so, God was already working in her life. Tina was like, tell me more. And one thing led to another. And a few days later, she surrenders and gives her life to Jesus as King and is baptized. And she still is a devout follower of Jesus in Canada today. But a few months after that first initial meeting with her, she wrote me an email that I have hung on to and read a couple of times a year. She said, all the stuff that Jesus has changed and is changing in her life, this is just the paragraph I want you to read or hear. I could probably write for hours tonight. God has placed me on such an amazing and interesting path now. And I've just had one of the best days of my life. I saw my doctor today, and by the end of the month, I won't be on Prozac anymore, which for me is a big step, but also a scary one. I've been feeling such an amazing feeling of grace lately, and I have such great people from the church surrounding me. It doesn't seem as bad as it could be. For the first time in years, I can confidently say that even though I'll still deal with depression and suicide for the rest of my life, I don't need drugs, sex, or the wrong kind of people to get me through it. And I don't think I could ever thank y'all enough. Eventually, I probably would have come to this path, but God brought you into my life when I needed it the most, and with y'all's help, the other Harding students and the people of the church, I'll make it through this. That's probably the best lesson I've learned. My life doesn't have to end. There's hope and grace and people who are out there in the world that genuinely care for me, even if they don't know me. That we all have this common bond in God and Jesus. And I just pray from this point on, I can live my life the best way possible. And thanks for what Jesus did for us. Who doesn't want to share that with somebody? I've seen this hundreds, maybe 1,000+ times in my life. The eternity, the love of God, Jesus' grace, it really is good enough to share. Here's what it is. I don't know who needs to hear this. Jesus' grace means, his grace means there is love coming at you that has nothing to do with you. That's what God's love is, God's grace is. And because of that grace, I can tell you, there was a time in my life when I was addicted and lonely and filled with anxiety and depression. And then Jesus forgave me and I chose to follow him. And now, and every word of this is true, my life is dripping with meaning and joy and community and purpose. Do you have a story like that?